This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we continue the topic of discussion, UFOs, the drive-in. Randall, you want to pick up on the questioning?
Yeah, we were just talking about how theatrical in nature the behavior of the craft themselves are. We're at an entertainment event, which is a theatrical event. You know, maybe they're just sort of trying to mimic the lighting that's going on in order to see how people react to it, that kind of thing. Because like you were saying, Preston, before the break, if they didn't want us to see them, there's no reason that we would. They could be studying our planet entirely incognito. If they've got this kind of technology, we may not know that they're there at all unless they choose to show themselves. And this does seem very intentional.
Yeah. I mean, here's a strange case. This is one of the cases that made me kind of want to write this book. It was one of the Colorado cases. This one occurred in Boulder, Colorado. And the witnesses saw this object way off in the distance kind of moving this meandering pattern until it kind of gets close to the theater, and then it makes a beeline towards him, comes straight for him. It's a classic domed saucer, as it usually is in most of these cases. There's different shapes, but it's usually your classic disc. And it was 200 feet overhead. It stops. It's right next to the screen and starts flashing lights at people, which were so bright. They were painful to look at. The audience did react, in this case, by honking their horns and flashing their lights back at the object. So there was this sort of little communication or conversation, so to speak. It was very brief, though, in this case. And, you know, after the car started honking, this object moves away. In this case, it just came upon the theater and saw it and like, oh, this looks interesting. The objects just dropped down out of the sky and or approached from a distance straight towards the theater itself.
That would be just such an amazing thing to see. I know that there are some few number of more recent sightings, but it seems like these all took place back in what is mainly the golden era of ufology before people were highly stigmatized against the phenomena. It was actually kind of a cool thing if you could see a UFO. It was like, wow, that's really cool. Nowadays, it's we're not getting these kinds of mass sightings or in groups like this. It makes me wish that I lived back then. If I could go back in time, this is one of the things I would do. I would take your book with me, and I would go to every one of these places and see this take place while it was happening. I mean, it would be a whole new way to go about researching the subject, that's for sure. I've got a couple more. This is the other Starlight Drive-In Theater at Alamogordo. Okay, this one happened in 1952 and remains the most prolific in terms of drive-in theater encounters. A particularly credible account comes from an anonymous second lieutenant, also an aeronautical engineer, assigned to the missile test unit at Holloman Air Force Base. On October 7th, 1952, the officer and his wife were at the Starlight Drive-In Theater. This time, Starlight is hyphenated in Alamogordo, New Mexico, when they both saw something that they were unable to explain. Tell us more.
Yeah, 1952 was a crazy year. That was probably the biggest year in terms of these encounters. They showed no fear of being seen all over the United States and the world. I think that's kind of why we have a lot in 1952. This is also, again, next to Holloman Air Force Base, which is a huge, huge UFO magnet. So that could definitely be part of what's going on here. This is, again, sort of the pre-show. It's not a particularly dramatic sighting, but the officer, the aeronautical engineer, was not the first to notice it. It was his wife who saw this strange light. Looking through the windshield, it was oval in shape, lighter on the outside than in the center, appeared to be kind of whitish or pale blue in color, first appeared on the east horizon, moved in a straight line, and faded out pretty quick. this is kind of a case which I would label more as a sort of random flyby. Because let's face it, you're out there at night for hours at a time. That's prime viewing spot. A drive-in theater would be a great place to see a UFO. And in some cases, they aren't specifically targeting theaters. They're just sort of randomly flying by. And I think that's what's going on here. It lacks the sort of features I look for. It's not super low level. It's not right next to the screen. It's not putting on a show. But I included it because, you know, it's still sort of a sighting at a theater.
And by someone also who is in the military who has some sort of credentials. And I'm seeing that there's quite a few of those types of sightings in the book. And that a lot of them were in the 50s and in 1952. And you say about this sighting that it was around at this time, the 1952 wave, that it was coming to the end around this time.
Yep, yep. I don't know what was going on that year. This was just a few years after Roswell, right? 1947. But something went on in 1952 that was just insane.
Well, the DC sightings in 52, those were some of the most credible and incredible sightings of pretty much all time in ufology history, where we had aircraft going up and being vectored to them with radars from civilian and military locations nearby, different radar stations, and then locking on with their own radar on the jet to have the jet be surrounded by these glowing blue lights, and the pilot going, well, you know, radioing in, going, well, what do I do now? You know, 1952 was really incredible.
Yeah, according to Ed Ruppelt of Project Blue Book, there was a six-month period there, most of the summer, where 148 of the world's leading newspapers carried more than 16,000 articles about UFOs. So it was definitely all the rage.
It makes you wonder if they're just trying to get in on the popularity or something. Like, what if their social structure is just such that they're doing it just like, you know, how, you know, in the old days, a barnstormer might barnstorm a barn or a farm or something like that, just to get attention, just to be part of the show, become noticed.
There's something to that, for sure. UFOs attracted to cars on highways late at night. How many cases are there of UFOs just pacing cars down the road, scaring the wits out of a driver in the middle of the night on some random highway?
Lots.
Hundreds, literally. Their behavior in those cases is, again, very much like joyriding.
You took the words right out of my mouth. But why would aliens come, you know, light years to joyride around? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, it's hard to imagine. I mean, the amount of energy it would take to get here and to do all that just for a joyride, it seems absurd.
We're assuming it does take an enormous amount of energy. It could be easy for them. Might be just a hop, skip, and a jump to Earth to scare the Earthlings and have a fun night out. Maybe these are teenagers. Some people ask me that. That's interesting you say that, because I've got a few onboard cases where people have been taken on board a craft and swear up and down that the ETs who were flying this thing were teenage grays.
You know, okay, what if they're these nomad-type aliens? In other words, these aren't the ones that have FTL and can go at light speed and zip back and forth from their planet to ours, but maybe their planet, you know, is gone a long time ago. Their sun went nova, but they've got these big ships, and they just kind of wander around the galaxy at low speed. They have really, really long lifespans. They don't get old and die like we do. So they've got all the time in the universe to just sort of float around and visit different planets, and it takes them a long time to get there. So when they finally get to one, it's like, you know, shore leave, time to get out and have some fun.
Yeah, well, we don't know where they come from, do we? For all we know, they have bases here on Earth for a very long time.
You've got an undersea base there where you talk about the possibility that there might be one even off the coast out there where you live in California.
Yeah, and I think I built a pretty compelling argument for it, because some of these cases involve not just a few objects. We're talking hundreds, and they're coming from below. So where are they coming from? That's kind of my question. Like, what is going on here if we have 200 objects coming out of the water here?
We certainly touch on some of your other books as well, because you've got a number of them. They're all really fun. The last one, when you were on the show, we were talking about onboard UFO encounters. And then before that, we were talking about schoolyard UFO encounters. The schoolyard UFO encounters, they were covered quite extensively in James Fox's film, The Phenomenon, which we should ask if you've seen.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
We're going to see this coming up with Gene Randall and Preston. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
The stress levels of Americans may be at an all-time high. From education to business to basic needs to politics, the 2020 pandemic-related stressors are pushing many of us to near breaking point. That's why you should consider the stress and pain-relieving products from Sunny-Bay.com, like our lavender neck wraps and pads infused with premium Washington lavender buds. They relieve tension and relax with a soothing scent of lavender. And lifestyle expert Jennifer Bonner recommends products from Sunny Bay.
Sunny Bay's hands-free neck wraps should be your go-to pain relief solution.
Give gifts to family and friends that relieve stress and pain. Give love and care by giving the best. Give pillows, neck wraps, and body wraps from Sunny-Bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Just click Sunny-Bay.com. That's Sunny-Bay.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Cal Ripken. It's definitely humbling to know that now people are calling me a hero. Instead of finding the IED with my metal detector, the IED found me first, and that resulted in double above-knee amputations. It's hard to describe the feeling of meeting somebody that you've always wanted to be like. There are people now that are looking up to you for their inspiration and to be their role model.
Visit saluteheroes.org to learn more.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Gene Randall and Preston Dennett joining us. Randall, you had a question of Preston.
Right, yeah, just before the break, we were talking about some of Preston's other books, including Onboard UFO Encounters and Schoolyard UFO Encounters, two major cases of which were covered by James Fox's film, The Phenomenon. And I was just asking Preston if he'd seen the movie yet.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it yet. I want to. It's getting really good reviews, I hear. And I know they covered the Rua Zimbabwe case at Ariel Elementary School. So I'm excited to see that. And I know there's supposed to be a full-length documentary on that coming out at some point as well. But I don't think people realize that there's 100 of these cases, and probably a lot more than that, all over the world.
What about young people with their parents at these drive-ins? Like, I imagine it's not just older people. There's probably a number of young people that were involved, too. Do you have any cases that you can talk about where the person involved was still quite young at the time?
Yeah, actually, there's quite a few cases which seem to involve young witnesses, actually. Often it is families or a couple. Most of these cases do rely on, you know, just one source, usually a family. But some of these witnesses were very young. One of my favorite cases occurred on July 17th, 1954, when a young six and a half year old by the name of Peter was at this Skyline Drive-In Theater outside of St. Louis, Missouri. A fairly large theater, could hold 600 cars. He's watching the movie with his mom and his brother, when suddenly everyone stops watching the movie because there's this giant glowing red object which appears next to the parking lot. It is very bright. It's casting this eerie red light over the entire parking lot. Everyone's getting out of their cars. No one's panicking or anything, but they're completely awestruck and they're staring at this thing. And it didn't stay very long, just a few minutes. People started running towards it. And that's when this thing took off like a bullet and was gone. Turned out Peter's father worked at the local airport. He saw it too, which was not far away from where they were. He and a bunch of people at the airport were looking at it through binoculars. What's really interesting about this case is this incident had a huge impact on Peter's life. He always believed in UFOs, followed the phenomena very closely, became close friends with some major UFO researchers like Robert Gribble, who started the National UFO Reporting Center. And this is many years later, in the 70s, I think, when Robert Gribble says, you know what, I'm going to have to give up the National UFO Reporting Center. I just can't do it anymore. I need to find someone to take over. And this is when Peter said, I'll do it. Peter's last name is Davenport. And Peter Davenport is now the head of the National UFO Reporting Center, the director, and has said that this sighting at the drive-in theater is responsible for him having developed an interest in UFOs and become the director of New Fork. But I wonder if the UFOs knew what they were doing, and this was part of their sort of campaign to announce their presence.
And now you know the rest of the story. That is really, that is a really good story. It was one of my favorite ones in the book when I read that. It was the one I was going to ask you about next. So I'm really glad that you brought that one up. So there you go. You have the phenomena, whether it's just a phenomenon, and this is something else we should talk about too, or actual, objectively real aliens with some kind of a personality and intelligence that have made a really profound cultural impact on our society just by the way that they expose their presence to this one person.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? It's what I find interesting about these cases is, by and large, they're mostly simple sightings, close encounters of the first kind. There's a small handful that are what we would call close encounters of the second kind, and that it does affect the physical environment in some way. The screen or the speakers might fuzz up, this sort of thing. Couldn't find anything that I would directly say was abduction, though there are some cases with weird amnesia problems and memory problems and sort of weird events that point towards that. Ultimately, I decided that these are all close encounters of the fifth kind, human-initiated encounters, because in effect, we are calling them down. These drive-in theaters are a really powerful method to initiate a UFO encounter. So I'm going to call them CE5s.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's, well, sort of fair enough, I guess. I mean, you know, Greer kind of co-opted that saying because initially, really, that was built into the Hynek Valley system. But, yeah. Yeah, right? Fair enough.
They're drawn to these theaters. It's clear, just judging from case after case and their behavior, that this is what's bringing them down. So, yeah, it's an effective method for sure. And I'm guessing there are going to be more cases because we do have some modern cases. I've got a case from 2019, 2017, 2015. They're not as great as some of the earlier cases, but we see the same type of behavior.
Just to clarify what I was saying there about the, you know, the fifth kind, in the Hynek Valley system, when we're talking about kinds of close encounter experiences, the fifth kind there is the one that includes positive or negative physical changes to the witness. Stephen Greer, who's become quite popular, you know, as a personality in the UFO field, I don't think he was even aware of that when he decided that he was going to introduce this, you know, CE5 type of thing and make it into what you were saying there, Preston, which is where people can interact and communicate with them somehow by, like you're saying, maybe shining lights or calling them down somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if that classification system is, you know, it's sort of losing popularity a little bit. I know it's still used in a lot of titles and things, but...
No, certainly. Well, I mean, QFO still uses it. It's classic ufology. I mean, it's basic ufology coming right up out of, you know, anomalies, flybys, maneuvers, close encounters, first, yeah, second, third, fourth, fifth kinds.
But we have sightings that have telepathic communication. How would you rate that?
That'd be a CE4, includes interaction.
Right? All right.
So, yeah, but I mean, you know, you're right. I think there's been a real loss of focus or interest on what would be called classical ufology, where people tried to catalog this and put it into some kind of objective ordering system so that we could study the phenomena in a more orderly and academic way. A lot of people just go, oh, well, you know, a UFO is, after all, it just means an unidentified flying object, and therefore it could be anything. That's never what it's meant.
It's been a semantic disaster from day one. When I talk about UFO, I think we should just call them alien craft.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm with you. I mean, that's how I think that we ought to define them, because I mean, we can go back to the USAF definition, and we can go through that, which is this really long, drawn-out definition that goes through several different types.
More to come with Gene and Randall and Preston. You're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices at the Centers for Disease Control has added its approval to the emergency use authorization for Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine. The CDC committee voted Saturday to recommend the vaccine for use for people 16 years of age or older. Now that the COVID vaccine has received authorization, the task of getting it out to millions of Americans is underway. Speaking at a Saturday press conference, Operation Warp Speed Chief Operating Officer General Gustav Perna says his group's mission still has a long way to go to be completed.
So while today we applaud everybody who's been a part of the team part of the collaboration, part of the success that's brought us here today. We know that we are not done. We are not done until every American has access to the vaccine, to every American that wants it, receives it.
This is USA Radio News. President-elect Joe Biden has made his pick to run the Department of Veterans Affairs. Jeremy Scott has more from the USA Radio News Oregon Bureau.
Biden has appointed Dennis McDonough as the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
He shares my belief that we have many obligations as a nation. We have only one truly sacred obligation, to prepare and equip our troops that we send into harm's way, and then to care for them and their families when they return.
McDonough was President Obama's chief of staff from 2013 to 2017. President-elect Biden said he played a key role in improving health care for veterans during the administration. From the Oregon USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Jeremy Scott.
And President Trump has added a federal holiday to the calendar this year. The executive order, signed Friday, makes Christmas Eve, Thursday, December 24th, a federal holiday, giving federal workers a fully paid day off. Traditionally, past presidents have offered federal workers a half day in the past. This is USA Radio News.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So from cases involving UFOs, drive-in theaters, and other places, Preston Dennett, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, we're plotting definitions, right, Randall?
Well, yeah, we were just talking about that before the break there, where, you know, if you go back to the most sophisticated definition from the U.S. Air Force, which is Air Force AFR 202 from February 5th, 1958. I mean, it just basically what it does is it goes through everything that a UFO is not. So if what you're looking at isn't any of these things, then it's a UFO. And it doesn't leave any room for you to conclude that it's anything but something alien. Yeah, so instead of just saying it's an alien craft, they go, well, no, it's not a familiar known object. It's not an unknown aircraft. It's not a missile. It's not lights near an airport. It's not anything that you can identify even after you've studied it for some length of time. It's not meteors, planets, stars. You know what I mean? It just leaves no room for anything else.
Have windows. It's metallic. It leaves no cars. But we don't know what it is.
But we don't know what it is.
Exactly. Let's call it a UAP. Hey, let's...
Doesn't that just drive you nuts when you hear that, this whole UFP, UA? I mean, a phenomena is not an object, is it? A phenomena is just... Who knows exactly what it is? It's nebulous, right? But when you say, you know, like Stanton Friedman used to say... We're talking about flying saucers. I don't care about the rest, is what he'd say. And I think he's right. I think that if we start getting into this whole, well, it's just a phenomena. We don't know what it is. It's unidentified, so it could be anything. I think that's really muddying the water.
Yeah, flying saucer doesn't work either because they're not all saucers.
Well, that's true. UFO is good. Alien craft is the best. I'm with you on that, totally.
Yeah, and I think that's what we are talking about here, honestly.
Certainly, though, someone like the Pentagon is not going to say alien craft by saying UAP they get away from the stench of UFO, just like UFO got away from the stench of flying saucer. And maybe in a few years we'll have something else. You know, well, UAP will be supplanted.
They use that term.
Yeah,
so that's true. I like that.
You know, that's not fair either when, you know, like, Gene, you make a really good point there where you say, well, the stench of, and but, you know, I think, you know, us ufologists are just as responsible for perpetuating that as the skeptics are, because we've caved into it. We believe it ourselves now. You know, it's like, oh, my God. This is one of the things I loved about Stanton Friedman is he just rejected all of that. He said, like, look, this is an unfair, derogatory type of criticism of a phenomena that deserves to be taken very seriously. And instead of backing down and throwing, you know, the ufologists under the bus and accusing them all of being tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists and say, no, some of them are very serious people who take the subject matter academically and want to learn the truth. I mean, right, guys? Isn't this what we're trying to do here?
Yeah, I agree. Calling it a phenomenon or a mystery, I think we've got a handle on what these things most likely are and what their agenda is. People are seeing humanoids. People are seeing metallic craft. They are leaving burn marks. People have physiological reactions, both positive and negative. I think we've got a pretty good handle on what these are. Now, not all researchers agree. You know, Jacques Vallée says probably some of these aren't extraterrestrial. And, you know, I'm not going to disagree with him. I think he's probably right. But most, I'm thinking, are what they appear to be. Vehicles with humanoids.
Or like Gene says, I mean, maybe in some cases, there is an objective reality behind it. There may be an actual craft somewhere behind it, but the technology that they're using might be something that can project out some sort of a image of some kind that we think is a real craft or is something that is really there but isn't really there. So they like to fool us. They like to trick our senses. But either way, we're still looking at something that I don't think, like David Halperin would suggest, just comes from our own mental processes, like, say, a collective unconscious that is manifested out into the physical world in some way. I mean, I like the idea. I like that way of thinking about it because it makes you think about it, but in a really objective sense about in terms of the reality of the world, I just don't see that there's any evidence that our minds can just conjure up physical realities that way.
Yes, but just think of it this way, Randall. Is it possible then that what we're seeing is so alien to our experience that we unwittingly manipulate what we see to be something more presentable? It doesn't mean necessarily that the force behind the UFOs are doing that, although that could be possible as well. That we're manipulating it. We look at something there and we have no idea what it is, and it's just as if we did this in the Middle Ages. And we saw whatever we saw then.
Visitors from God, whatever.
Now we see flying saucer people and flying saucers from outer space. And maybe 50 or 100 years from now, we'll see the same phenomenon with different eyes.
I'm sure we will. Yeah, the Romans called them flying shields. But I think the last 70 years we're seeing UFOs have not changed that much. The only real kind of era that makes me scratch my head is the airship wave of the 1890s, 1900s, Zeppelin-like objects, which don't seem to fit the classic pattern of UFOs.
But it did fit what we expected flying craft to be like.
Right. So I'm wondering.
So therefore, the same way, why not consider that what we see now is what we expect them to be like, not what is really there?
Yeah, but that's...
Although we might be closer.
That's the point. If that's true, wouldn't they have changed over the last 70 years, and we're not really seeing that.
We do have but how has our culture changed in the last 70 years? I don't mean that we can make fancier things. I mean the fundamental expectations of creatures from outer space. Certainly look at the advanced equipment board that spaceship, allegedly, that Barney and Betty Hill visited you had maps. You had a star map, which appears to be something connected with 1960s technology. So even then, it's quite possible what they saw, if it was something other than a government experiment or test of some kind, was manipulated by their expectations.
Yep.
Or hey, belief structure.
I wonder about that, because there does seem to be some aspect where there's symbology involved in UFO encounters, and they track cultures to a certain extent. There does seem to be a cultural influence. So I definitely wonder about it. I still think the extraterrestrial theory, it's so logical. I mean, we're looking at other stars, every indication that there would be life out there. We're finding Earth-like planets. People talk about interdimensional creatures. Perhaps they're interdimensional. Perhaps they're time travelers. Well, that doesn't preclude them from being extraterrestrials. Yeah, they may be able to put on a disguise, to have any appearance that they want. This doesn't
Maybe they have no choice. Maybe they do that because we could not accept what they look like. And I'll put that even in a very primitive sense. Imagine some of the horrible creatures we saw, like it came from outer space. Look at the Monster on the Loose series from the 1950s. Now imagine there is a race of beings that look like that. Or this silicon creature, the Horta, in one of the Star Trek episodes. Now imagine if those things were lumbering about. They'd frighten us. They don't want to frighten the populace, so they manifest themselves in ways that we could accept. So, yeah, maybe we're not seeing what's really there, or maybe we can't see what's really there because they're coming here in a way that makes them basically invisible to us. But then I'm just using the example from Contact, where the alien creature, so to speak, appeared as the late father of the protagonist in the movie, because that's the way she could accept his appearance or its appearance. Accept this for Gene Randall and Preston, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nanocolloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nanocolloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, by the way, Preston will be back on After the Paracast, part of your Paracast Plus subscription for more information. And to subscribe in seconds, go to the Paracast.plus, the Paracast.plus. So I posed a question about how UFOs appear, and maybe it's either we can't accept them any other way or they deliberately tailor their look, their actions to the way we expect them to look. Preston?
Yes. We can't rule anything out, can we? What I find very interesting about ETs and people's descriptions of them is that they are pretty much universally humanoid. Even when you're talking about robotic type beings, people describe a humanoid shape. And in terms of humanoids, so, large eyes are very common. Bald head is extremely common. There are certain details which just crop up again and again. But if this is a phenomenon that culturally tracks people, why is it that people who are widely separated and know nothing about each other and aren't exposed to the UFO phenomena? They're not readers. They don't, you know about grays so much. Certainly back in the day, it was much less popular. But they're describing very similar things. People describe the interiors of UFOs in very similar ways. And I still get these goosebumps sometimes when people describe rare details that I don't think are super well known. I'm like, wow, this points towards this being an objectively real phenomenon that is exactly what it appears to be.
At least in some cases. I mean, what we were talking about before the break about them, you know, maybe not necessarily being what they appear to be, but still being something alien, an alien intelligence of some kind behind it, I think is highly possible. One of the sci-fi representations of this idea that we missed talking about is Childhood's End. Now, they did a mini-series about that not too long ago, and this is very much along those same lines. In the case of Childhood's End, without giving away too much of the story, what you have are these very intelligent, highly powerful aliens that do come down and make their presence known through their technology and their ships, but it takes them some time to reveal themselves because, as Gene, you were saying, their belief is that we wouldn't be able to accept them in their form. And, of course, eventually you do see that they are revealed and we understand why. So look at the various people, for example, out there who think that aliens could be transports from hell. Now, what if it turned out to be actually something like that?
Yeah, well, in my book, Onboard Experiences, most of them believe it's extraterrestrial. One guy's convinced they're demonic. Another guy's convinced they're angels. And another guy's convinced he's more of the Jacques Vallée, Lauren Coleman camp, that this is an intelligence that has the ability to wear different masks.
There are people, as you say, who believe that UFOs must be demonic. In fact, my late uncle, Lewis Kaplan, my wife's uncle, was part of a religious sect of Jews for Jesus, and their perception of UFOs was entirely demonic.
Oh, really? In what way, Gene?
They were the spawn of the devil. Had to cite some kind of Lord's Prayer.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, you could throw, holy water on them and they would dissolve
possibly something like that.
I have books on demonology because of this.
Yeah.
A substantial portion of the population believes this. So I wondered about it, and I started looking into it, and bad ghosts and poltergeists and demons, which does appear to be a real phenomena, but as far as I can tell, it's separate. If you want to outline a demonic haunting, it follows a very set pattern, very much like a UFO encounter follows a pretty set pattern. You're taken on board, physically examined, you're given messages, you're let go. A demonic haunting has a completely different pattern. Starts with sort of knockings and cold spots and objects disappearing, and it moves up to oppression, where it picks on one witness, usually in the house, and haunts them with apparitions and nightmares and all kinds of stuff, and ultimately leads to possession. It's a destructive phenomena that really wreaks havoc on people's lives, and can happen if you use the Ouija board or mess around with occult subjects. I think it's a real phenomenon, but I don't think it's the same thing.
We've got kind of all the same kind or types of phenomena being involved in it. In other words, we've got the levitation of objects. So we've got some sort of anti-gravity. We've got some sort of ability for them to morph in and out of what seemed to be our reality. So, that's like some kind of cloaking or some way to be able to move through walls, that kind of ability. To know what people are thinking and to manipulate them with their mind. There's the telepathic aspect of it. And so all you need to do is just turn the dial a little bit on the various aspects of the alien encounter, and it becomes like a demonic visitation. There's really practically no difference at all, except for, like you say, this. I think these differences are very subtle, and they're subtle enough that maybe we are dealing with the same phenomena, but it's just manifesting itself in a slightly different way.
I don't know. I think the similarities are subtle. I think they're really vastly different, ultimately. Yeah, there's a weird bleed through. I had one case of a haunting I was investigating here in Van Nuys in Southern California.
Well, you see, that's the interesting issue here. It's Van Nuys, California. That's why.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, all the listeners from Van Nuys, California will come and demonstrate against the show.
Well, they were having a terrible time in this apartment 15 on Kester Avenue in Van Nuys. Ghosts. Finally, they just left the apartment because one of them was nearly possessed. They couldn't invite friends over because apparitions would appear. It was just a very scary situation for them. So they move out, and it was like a week later that a very close-up UFO sighting over their new apartment.
I could believe that, because in virtually every other paranormal investigator we've interviewed this year, and I've been asking this question fairly consistently, they have all, except for maybe one who hadn't really thought much about it, but then when they did kind of thought, that seems to make sense, there's been a very high correlation between places where there have been hauntings and UFO sightings.
Yeah, there's a connection, definitely. There was one case I investigated where a guy had a UFO land in his backyard. It appeared to land. This is in Canyon Country, California, fairly rural area where he lived. Next night, Bigfoot shows up. Following that, he had a huge poltergeist outbreak in his home.
Let's just cover a few more of your books. You've got one called UFOs Over New York, and I don't think we've talked to you about that one. So tell us just very briefly about that and where people can find you and what you're doing in the near future.
All right. Yeah, UFOs Over New York was one of a series I did on various states because I thought it was important to sort of historically record these encounters. New York's most famous encounter is, I think, the New York blackout. A lot of UFOs related with that. I'm on to, book number 28 now. Got two more planned for next year. I'm keeping busy.
Where do we find more of your stuff?
got a website. If you Google my name, it'll take you right there. PrestonDennett.weebly.com. Books are also available on Amazon. Got a new YouTube channel. I'm putting out videos on some of my research. Yeah, I'm not giving up. Not until I see the Roswell craft in the museum.
You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast. On Facebook, look for the Paracast and find two places for us. And maybe one day we'll figure out how to merge one with the other without destroying it. But of course, now that Facebook's being sued by everybody on the planet, we'll have to see how that works out. We also have branded merchandise. If you like the Paracast, you're going to like the stuff we offer, T-shirts and throw pillows and good stuff. Go to theparacast.shop, theparacast.shop. Preston Dennett will return on After the Paracast, which is part of our Paracast Plus package. We give you a version of this show also, free of the network ads. All of this price is starting at just $1.50 a month. The sale prices are remaining in effect for the time being. And if you subscribe for 5 years or lifetime, we give you a coupon code for a free download for the James Fox UFO documentary, The Phenomenon. Okay? With 3 hours of extra material. How about that? To learn more and to sign up to the Paracast Plus, go to theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Preston Dennett, thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
Hey, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Featuring Gene Steinberg is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.